That's one of the that's one of the great mysteries of my career, as far as I'm concerned, because I don't see what it is that I inject into my records that makes it sound like me. I mean, I can go through five or six songs without performing a single note of anything, and just literally just. Taking a directorial role in the background, but people still come to me and say, it's unmistakably you.
I am high in the sky, looking at you, I can read your mind.
Hi, you're listening to Redbeard and Alan Parsons, and we're going to be talking about the making of Eye in the Sky.
1977 was quite a pivotal year in the life of Alan Parsons. He had the good fortune to apprentice as a very young tape operator. That's the first step toward becoming a recording engineer at the EMI recording studios at Abbey Road in London at the time of the Beatles' White Album. 5 years later, Parsons would no doubt parlay his role as recording engineer on Pink Floyd's record-setting Dark Side of the Moon album into his own recording deal. By mid-1977, Alan Parsons had released his second project called iRobot to a very favorable reception, particularly on the burgeoning FM rock stations in America. And in 1977, Parsons welcomed his new son, Jeremy, into the world. After finding success with concept albums, first on Tales of Mystery and Imagination with the macabre stories of Edgar Allan Poe, followed by iRobot and the science fiction stories of Isaac Asimov, Alan Parsons and his partner, Eric Wolfson, looked to another fertile field for inspiration on their third project, 1978's Pyramid. Here's Alan Parsons in the studio.
Well, it started trying to be an album about, based on witchcraft. I mean, all areas of it, black magic and the occult and so on. But somehow we focused on the pyramid energy cult, which was very fashionable at that time. People were buying plastic pyramids in stores and keeping milk under them and things like that. So it was kind of largely led by this fashion, this pyramid power fashion. I'd always been fascinated by the pyramids and their history and their mystery as well, the incredible feat that it was to build them, and why the Egyptian and Mayan cultures went to all the trouble of building these incredible structures. Yeah, but there's another cult belief that the pyramids were extraterrestrial, or in part created by other beings, a greater intelligence than the human intelligence. Although I think the reality is that they were created by humans on Earth, but all this stuff that you read about the angles of being so perfect that they couldn't possibly have had the technology at the time to make all the angles so perfect.
Release Pyramid, that's Voyager, What Goes Up by the Alan Parsons Project. To this day, Alan Parsons' role as Pink Floyd's recording engineer on such albums as Umaguma, Atom Heart Mother, Metal, and the iconic Dark Side of the Moon carries considerable cachet. But let's be clear, only the Pink Floyd band members, song publishers, and the record company benefited from Dark Side's phenomenal sales. Take it from Alan Parsons.
Yes, contrary to popular belief, I did not get rich out of Dark Side of the Moon. I think suffice it to say that, you know, they were the kings of studio experimentalism. There's a good word. I was taught by them the strength in experimentalism, playing with sound, manipulating sound, combining different elements of sound together to create, you know, a composition. That was the lesson I learned from them, that you could actually compose by creating sounds. And quite a lot of their stuff, I think even they would admit, was not written as songs. It was written as sounds being assembled. And I think that's something I carried forward into my own career. You know, they were vastly more experienced in the studio than I was, although I had, you know, I had the correct technical upbringing, you know, having come up through the Abbey Road engineering apprenticeships system. So I knew the sort of nuts and bolts of recording, whereas they, I think they had more experience with knowing what toying with sound could actually achieve in terms of improving the creative process. I must give credit to Eric Wolfson for doing the bulk of the songwriting.
I
I must give credit to Eric Wolfson for doing the bulk of the songwriting. Although I did have a hand in this one, it has to be said. But I was no lyric writer, especially in those days. So he pretty much put the entire lyric together on that song, as did he on most of the project stuff. But I think we were probably referring to a Pharaoh's tomb. You know, can't take it with you. And perhaps the Pharaohs perhaps did take more with them than the average. The average Joe Blow. But, you know, I think, you know, I gave Eric his big break and he gave me mine. You know, there's no question that it was a partnership that worked. Obviously, it happened for a reason because, you know, as soon as we worked together, we created a certain amount of magic and a certain amount of notoriety, if you like.
Alan Parsons' role on the Pyramid album, as well as the preceding and subsequent ones, was that of producer, much like the Martin Scorsese of rock.
That's one of the great mysteries of my career, as far as I'm concerned, because I don't see what it is that I inject into my records that makes it sound like me. I mean, I can go through literally five or six songs without performing a single note of anything, and just, you know, literally just taking a directorial role in the background, but people still come to me and say it's unmistakably you, and as far as I'm concerned, it's one of life's great mysteries. I don't know what it is that I put in there, what I inject in there. It's just something. It's for others to decide, not for me.
also from the 1978 Pyramid album by the Alan Parsons Project, that's Can't Take It With You. That album was quickly followed by the often overlooked Eve Project in 1979.
Believe it or not, despite having this reputation as being, having electronica roots, I always preferred to use real strings or real brass or real woodwind in rather than use any kind of synthesized sound. And you have to realize that, I mean, in 76, 77, 78, those were still the early days for synthesizers, and especially polyphonic synthesizers. By the time Eve came along, there was a big monster Yamaha polyphonic synthesizer called the CX-80, which you could play chords on, but you had to tune it almost every day to get it to sound anything like in tune. It was an absolute nightmare of an instrument, but it had some great sounds.
Featuring real strings and French horns, that's the Alan Parsons Project with Damned If I Do from the 1979 album Eve. Up next, Alan Parsons reveals how success forced relocation to the Kingdom of Monaco, where they could receive a royal flush of inspiration for their biggest hits. I'm Redbeard, in the studio for the definitive collection, the best of the Alan Parsons Project.
Hello, this is Alan Parsons with Redbeard in the studio, and we're going to be talking about the making of The Turn of a Friendly Card.
Thank you, Alan. The breakthrough success of the album I, Robot, followed by Pyramid's top 30 sales and Eve peaking at number 13 in the U.S., all had a curious effect on Parsons and his partner, Eric Wolfson. They became tax exiles from the U.K. Emigrating to the Mediterranean casinos of Monaco, they found the deck of ideas stacked in their favor. Here's Alan Parsons.
By the time we'd finished Pyramid, the success of the act, the Alan Parsons Project, was reasonably established, and we were forced by the British Chancellor of the Exchequer, who was going to make our tax bills anything up to 93%. We were forced to leave the UK and live in Monaco, and I'm sure you know what Monaco is most famous for, and so that's where the inspiration for The Turn of a Friendly Card came from. I think, games people play in the middle of the night, which is the chorus, I think that's a direct reference to gambling and the gambler, if you like. But maybe it's an observation on somebody with a gambling problem, wondering how he's going to feed the mouths of his families.
Yeah.
From November 1980, that's the Alan Parsons Project with Lenny Zakatek on vocals and Games People Play from the album The Turn of a Friendly Card. The album peaked at number 13 in America, in part due to an unlikely hit called Time. Again, Alan Parsons.
Again, I give all the credit for writing the song to Eric. At the time he first played it to me, it was about the same tempo as Pink Floyd's Us and Them. There was a chord progression that he'd put in there, which was literally stolen right out of Us and Them, and I asked him to change it. So it was slightly written as slightly differently in the first line of the verse. It was extremely similar to Us and Them originally. He felt that he wanted to have a go at the vocal himself for the first time. He'd done a lot of singing on demos and stuff in the past. I mean, it was always the way we communicated a song to a singer, that Eric would usually go and lay down some kind of demo vocal onto the multi-track tape. On this occasion, he was kind of insistent, said, "I'd really like to have a go at this one myself." And that's what he did, and he gets the biggest hit of the entire, the second biggest. I think Eye in the Sky was the biggest, but which was also him singing, of course. But he ended up singing most of the hits, much to my surprise, because I always used to tease him about the fact that he wasn't really a singer, and he's never really forgiven me for that.
Where we shall meet again.
Sung by Alan Parsons Project songwriter Eric Wolfson on the 1980 album The Turn of a Friendly Card, that's called Time. Next, Alan Parsons returns with their biggest hit, I'm Redbeard, in the studio for the definitive collection, the best of the Alan Parsons Project.
Hi, you're listening to Redbeard and Alan Parsons, and we're going to be talking about the making of Eye in the Sky.
Thanks again, Alan. I was surprised to hear that, like its predecessor, The Turn of a Friendly Card, the 1982 international hit album Eye in the Sky had its inspiration from the surveillance at the casinos in Monte Carlo. Here's Alan Parsons in the studio.
I think Turn of a Friendly Card was very, very clearly based on the Monte Carlo experience. But Eye in the Sky, I think, probably had its initial roots also in gambling. I think Eric was not only thinking of you know, the sort of Big Brother image of the Eye in the Sky, or a Eye in the Sky helicopter over a city looking at traffic or weather or whatever. But I think he was also thinking of the hidden cameras in casinos. So there was kind of a link with all those things, I think, for the album. And I like to see Eye in the Sky not particularly as a concept album, although others have tried to piece together some sort of concept. I choose to think it doesn't have a particularly strong one.
This instrumental, called Serious, became the theme for Michael Jordan's NBA champion Chicago Bulls basketball team.
I heard about it just from an American friend who called me when I was still living in the UK and said, hey, you know, they're playing one of your tunes as walk-on music for Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. And I said, who is Michael Jordan? Guess what? I'm not a sports fan. Yeah. I found out that he was about as tall as I was. Hey, I'm delighted, and you know, it's gone beyond the Bulls. It's gone into basketball teams, and it's apparently been used by the NFL this year.
Don't try, turn and take.
That's the number 3 single title song from 1982's Eye in the Sky. Even though Alan Parsons admitted to me no particular interest in voting, neither in his native England nor now that he lives in California, that does not mean he doesn't care about others.
No, that doesn't mean that at all. I just find politicians rather boring people. And whether they're any better equipped to actually solve the world's problems than you or I are is debatable, I think. I'm fully aware that there are all kinds of problems in the world, you know, war being the worst of them, but I'm not certain that politics is ever going to set the record straight or put things right, should I say. There are no easy fixes. That's the problem. People will always have conflicts based on religion, based on territory, you know. That's something that will never go away. And political solutions aren't always the answer. That's my only point, really.
Alan Parsons Project from 1982's Eye in the Sky album, a number 7 seller, with Psychobabble, one of the reasons the album has sold over 5 million copies worldwide. Alan Parsons and Eric Wolfson dissolved their creative partnership after releasing 10 Alan Parsons Project albums with combined sales of more than 40 million copies. In 1990, Wolfson relaunched his career composing stage musicals. Eric Wolfson died in December 2009 from cancer. He was 64. I'm Redbeard in the studio.